So we just finished up our sermon series in Mark, and right now we're kind of doing sort of a free-for-all preaching circuit in the month of April before we start the next series. And so 2 weeks ago, you'll remember that Ted talked about solitude and silence as spiritual discipline. And last week, Diana talked to us about the spiritual discipline of listening. And so today, actually, to keep with that theme, in a way, I want to talk about another spiritual discipline, but not one that we frequently address. I think not one that many people think of, actually, as a discipline. And that is, this week, I want to talk about the spiritual discipline of play. Play, P-L-A-Y, which is kind of near and dear to my heart. I do want to say right off the bat, at the outset, that play, at least the word as we understand it, that terminology, is not really apparent in the biblical text. In fact, I think, and this is like by the NIV, there's only one usage of the word play, or what's translated as play, in the NIV, and it's like this obscure text about a Leviathan playing in water. So it's not in the biblical text, at least in the sense that there's not like an outline of theology for play in the biblical text. But I think that doesn't mean that the themes, that doesn't mean that the idea of play isn't inherent in the Bible. And I think anytime the Bible talks about joy, laughter, celebration, the festivals, even dance and song, those are undergirding the idea and the place of play in our lives. So even with our text today, I'll be honest, I'm not going to approach it so much as an exegetical text, but using it more as an example of the undergirding themes that I think are present. So, the spiritual discipline of play. I think the first question we need to ask ourselves, of course, is what is play? And at first we might think, well, that's pretty easy to define, but the more we look at it, the more complicated it gets. For instance, we might say that if we were to have a game of hockey or a game of basketball, because I'm not Canadian, I don't play hockey, if we were to have that game amongst ourselves in this church, that would be play, right? That would be a time of play. But I think it's a stretch to say that, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals or the NBA Finals, I think it's a stretch to call what those guys do really play, right? Like, they're not really playing in a sense. Musicians, you know, when they're playing music, when Abraham's leading his orchestra, you know, we might say, ah, that's play. But when the beginner, you know, picks up the violin for the first time and starts practicing, we might struggle to call that really playing. So this concept of play is difficult to pin down, and I think it's made worse by the fact that in our current world, in our current language, the word play is actually really overused, right? We can play video games, we can play board games, we play sports, we play music, we play instruments, we attend plays, we see plays, we go to playgrounds. Really, play is kind of like this overused term. And we don't know if we're really playing or if we're being played, and then there's negative connotations with players. It's like a whole thing. So instead of a precise sort of three-point definition, today, and what I want to talk about throughout this whole sermon, are two characteristics of play. And what I mean to say is that I think with play, a lot of times we recognize it when we see it. And we actually understand it when we experience it. And even if we can't nail down exactly like a Webster's definition of what play is, we know it, even if we can't exactly define it. So I want to talk about two characteristics of play. And I think in order to see, in order to observe those characteristics, we need to watch people who play. And so we might ask ourselves, okay, who are the play experts? Who are the best people at play? In fact, who have spent most of their lives playing? And the answer, of course, is children, right? I think when we look at children, we look at children in play, we kind of uncover and discover what play actually is. And we want to ask the question, why do kids, or how do kids, play so well? What is it about children that enables them to play when adults, you know, are kind of stodgy and struggle with it? And even when things are going bad, how is it that children can turn everything into a game and they love games when adults hesitate? Adults don't like to play games, actually, for the most part. How is it that children are so great at play? Well, there are two reasons, I think. And the first one is that children play because children are free. And this brings me to one of the characteristics of play. It is that play is a free act. See, children aren't concerned about bills. They're not concerned about work or taxes, which we should all be concerned about right now because it's April. They're not even really concerned, you know, what other people think of them. You know, right? When children play, they're not like, oh my gosh, I'm going to look silly. And they're not concerned, often to our chagrin, they're not concerned even about their own safety most of the time. Like, they go crazy because it doesn't bother them. Children play because they are free from responsibilities. There's no work to get back to. You know, when you ask a kid, like, oh, what are the list of things you need to do today? They're not like, hey, I need this. Like, they don't have those responsibilities. In some sense, I'd say they don't know any better, right? They don't really know that they should be concerned because it's just not on their radar. And I would say and I would argue that it is only true freedom, and only in the place where there are no responsibilities, only there can we really play. Or to phrase this another way, perhaps a more controversial one, it is in order to practice the true discipline of play, we must be irresponsible. Now, as wise and thinking adults, you're probably like, no, that's wrong. We can't be irresponsible. It's fine for children to be irresponsible. It's fine for them to be free of responsibilities because they're children. But for adults, we can't do that. And we can't live without responsibilities. Someone needs to be concerned, right? We can't turn the entire world into a playground, so to speak, because there would be anarchy and, you know, things wouldn't get done. Adults must work. Because they must provide for the family, right? They need to be concerned about the bills and the taxes and all those things so that children can play. We cannot be perpetual children, right? We can't be irresponsible. And I agree with you, and I agree for the most part. And that is that it's true. We can't be children, and nor do I think we should strive to attain sort of the same mindset as a child. We're not going backwards, right? We do have responsibilities to take care of, and we can't experience the freedom of play just by returning to childhood, in a sense, right? We put childish ways behind us, actually. And so I think our freedom in play must come from a real, truly deeper source than being naive. It comes from a deeper source than just not knowing enough. Our freedom in play and our freedom overall, I think, comes from a different place. It comes actually from a place of trust. And I think, honestly, this is what is at one of the things that is really at the core of Christian play, and it's at the core of freedom, actually. It's all about trust. It's about a trust in a God who provides, who sustains, and who, to quote a children's song actually, who holds the whole world in his hands. And it's this realization, I think, that no matter how much we work, no matter how hard we strive, the truth is we really cannot add a single day to our lives. And when we fully trust in God and we begin to understand that it really isn't our responsibility. Right? Because in the end, in the final account, we don't make the world turn round. We actually, in the end, aren't responsible. We don't make the grass grow and we don't make the rain fall. God is ultimately in control. And when we play, when we truly play, I think we proclaim this loudly to the world, that we are able to enter in and to experience life in some small measure, recognizing that God is sovereign. God is sovereign and we are not. And when we trust, when we really play, we experience life in freedom. And it's not naive, it's not a lack of knowledge, but rather it's a fuller knowledge, right? It's not that we don't know better, it's that we know even better, and we recognize that God is in control. And to grasp this more fully, I think it might help to consider society's view on play, right? That is, how does society and the world around us understand play? Because surely, in our world today, people play a lot. This is just a statistic I read online, which are always faulty, but probably somewhat true. The average American in 2012 watched 34 hours of television a week. 34 hours of television a week. And it ranged, actually, the older you got, the more television you watched. Like, I think the lowest television was in your 20s when it was like 22 hours. But the average American, and this is not Canadians, so you can feel better about yourselves, but the average American watches 34 hours of television a week. So it's not that there's not a lot of free time, right? Our society has quite a bit of free time, has quite a bit of leisure, and I think that time actually could be construed as play. But I think actually the word play may be not the right word. I think the better word is actually distraction. Because for the majority of the world, and I would say for the majority of the world, and for the majority of Christians actually, and I would say even for myself frequently, instead of truly playing, I think most of my time, a lot of my time, is spent with distraction. Now when a Christian, I think, truly plays, they realize God is in control, and they surrender their responsibilities and the weights of the world because they know that actually God can't handle it, and He's had it all along. By contrast, a person seeking distraction is simply trying to take their mind off of things. Right? They're not surrendering anything. They don't really trust anyone. They just need to get distracted. They need to be entertained. And for the distracted person, play is merely an attempt to stop thinking about the harsh realities and all the responsibilities that they have to cover. And I think for myself as well, a lot of times play or that distraction is escaping responsibilities. And so we often turn to sports and television shows, movies, even books and video games, listening to music on the bus, all sorts of forms of distraction simply to take our mind off of the responsibilities. And there is no sense of trust, and there is only at best a little bit of a relief from work. Right? That's at best what the world, how society can view play. So the true Christian play recognizes God's sovereignty and our reliance on Him. And though the Bible does not explicitly talk about play per se, I think that this idea, our reliance, our trust on God, is written all over Scripture. And I believe it's the essence of Sabbath keeping, taking the day off, realizing that God is in control and still at work. And in our scripture for today, actually, we see that as well, right? In the first verse it says, "When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, it wasn't as if they did it themselves. Or the Lord has done great things for them." It's not their own accomplishments and their own striving that has done it. You notice actually that in this passage, the people are very passive. They are the ones who are filled with joy. Their mouths are filled with laughter. It's not about what they're doing, actually, but it's about what God is doing. That God, ultimately, and in the end, is in control. And so play is a free act, but I do want to say really quickly that this doesn't mean that play is just anarchy. Right? It doesn't just mean that in play there are no rules. And actually, in every game, whether it's a storybook or, you know, the game of volleyball, there are rules. That is, there are bounded, limited places where we play, right? So play isn't this like anarchy where everyone just does whatever they want. That's not what I mean by freedom. What I mean by freedom is that playing is done out of trust. And it's not mere distraction. It's not something just to preoccupy our minds so that we can escape the world. Play is rather one way we acknowledge that the real world is in God's hand. We play because we are free, and in playing, actually, we become free. So, play is an expression of freedom and it's an expression of trust. That's the first characteristic. And the second characteristic that I want to talk about is inextricably tied, I would say, to freedom and trust. But it's that play is an expression of joy, an expression of exuberance. That is, play does not serve some outside goal, okay? There's no other purpose to play, in a sense. It's born out of completely unnecessary joy. And again, you see this in kids, right? kids aren't playing games for some grand scheme or some purpose. They play because it's simply what kids do, right? This is what kids are, this is what kids do. And sociologists and developmental psychologists have observed kids at play, and they have listed all the benefits that people can get from play, right? When kids play, they say, oh, it's preparation for work life. You know, there's rules, and kids often play like doctors and play astronauts, like jobs. They've also said that sports teach hand-eye coordination. Puzzles might teach patience and problem-solving technique. And group games, of course, teach kids how to interact with other kids, interact with other people. So games and play serves a lot of these benefits. And there are many things that children learn through play, but those benefits are definitely not the reason why kids play, right? The kid's not thinking, oh, I need to play so I can develop my social skills and become more well-adjusted in society. That's not what they're thinking. Well, maybe some of them are, but most of them aren't, right? They're not saying, oh, I need to, you know, play catch so I can learn eye-hand coordination and become a baseball star one of these days. When kids, especially young kids, play, they just do it because they are kids, because that's how God created them, because they just have this joy. And I think this is one of the grand paradoxes of play. Because when play becomes about achieving goals, right, when play becomes all about getting the benefits, it actually ceases to be play at all. And again, we might look to society's examples of play to sort of like see this illustrated more clearly. And I think it's very clearly a classic example is with sports. Right? And so, when I was in undergrad, slightly out of undergrad, I actually tutored student athletes at my university. And I went to a large university. So these were some athletes who, you know, some of them had offers from the football, NFL, some had offers from the NBA, some had offers from Major League Baseball. Like, these were students, but they excelled at the sport they played, and they were essentially being paid to be at the university because they got scholarships. So I tutored these athletes, and for fun, I would actually ask them what their favorite sport was, which seems like ridiculous, right? Because you would think that their favorite sport is the one that they did all the time. But perhaps unsurprisingly, more often than not, their favorite sport was not the sport that they actually played for the university. So the guy who played baseball, and he'd actually been offered a position, I think, with the Mariners as a pitcher, well, in their farming league. Anyway, his favorite sport was snowboarding. It wasn't like anything to do with a ball at all. And the guy whose favorite sport, or who played basketball, and I think he now plays for an NBA team, his favorite sport was actually baseball. And the girl who, like, her, she was a track runner, her favorite sport was swimming. And, like, blew my mind. But the thing was, is that they had been paid, in a sense, to play their sport. And they worked every week. Their schedules were crazy, like practicing 5 times a week, doing these various things. And it had become work for them. It was no longer fun. It was no longer something to be enjoyed. It was just something that they had to do to get by. And actually, their favorite sport, what they really, truly played at, was something completely different. Now, don't read me wrong. I'm not saying that work is bad. Work, just like play, is something that I believe we are called to do, and it's something that God has prepared for us to do. And I think, of course, we need both work and play together in order to live life as full, frankly, as full human beings, but particularly as full Christians. I'm not saying work is bad. All I'm saying is that play itself must be an expression of joy and must be an expression of thanksgiving. It's not threatened, it's not coerced, it's something that we choose to do, something that comes from who we are and who we are created to be. It doesn't serve some higher purpose, it doesn't serve some higher, like, exterior goal. And as soon as it does, it ceases to be play. We play because it is an expression of who we are as humans, as created beings. And I think the age-old question of why, which, you know, kids love to ask, why, can't be answered for play. The question doesn't even make sense. It's sort of in the wrong category, right? We play because we are joyful creatures, because it's how God created us. It's like asking kid, why do you play? Do you play because it's fun? Because it's what kids do. And I think actually it's interesting because this is the place of all of creation, right? After all, is creation necessary? Is there a reason that the universe, that God needed the universe to be created? And I think the answer is actually no, right? God does not need creation. God doesn't, he's complete and he is whole in himself. He doesn't need to create things. And so in many ways, I think that creation itself is actually an act of play. Creation is a loving, joyful, and free act of God. And so it shouldn't surprise us that play is an integral part, is an integral expression of the joy that we have, because all of creation is. And although play is not mentioned in the Bible again, I think, at least as we understand the word to me, joy and the expressions of joy are written all over Scripture. And in the Psalms today, we see that worship is filled with joy. These prayers, the Psalms, are filled with joy. And in 2 Samuel 6, David dances for joy in front of the Ark of the Covenant, much to the chagrin of his wife. In Zephaniah 3:17, God is actually described as rejoicing and singing over the remnant of Israel. And joy is a fundamental part of the Christian life, one of the fruits of the Spirit. And I think play is one pure expression, one pure form of joy. So we've roughly, very roughly, outlined two characteristics of play. Right? The first is that play is an act of freedom and trust. It is an acknowledgement that God is in control, ultimately, and we are not. And unlike the rest of the world that simply seeks distractions through play, as Christians, we trust in God and we recognize that God is sovereign. The second characteristic is that play is an expression of joy and expression of thankfulness. We do not play so that we can accomplish goals to do this or do that, like getting paid for sports. We play because it is how God made us. It is one way in which we can enjoy this wonderfully unnecessary creation. Now, are we ever going to play perfectly, right? Are we ever going to be completely reliant and completely trust in God? Probably not. Are we ever going to be able to play without any ulterior motivation, like it's pure joy, nothing else? Probably not either, right? We're fallen human beings. I don't think we'll necessarily ever get precisely to that point, but that's one of the beautiful things about spiritual disciplines as a whole and play particularly. We enter into them as broken beings that need a lot of work, but as we practice spiritual disciplines and as we practice play, it helps us along. It actually continues to change us. And although we might not enter into play completely relying on God or completely believing in His sovereignty, as we start to play, I think somehow we are enabled to a little bit more. And though we may start off with the wrong motivations, like someone just forcing you to play a game, I think we find that as we start to play more and more, it starts to be less about someone forcing you and more a true expression of joy. I don't think that we'll ever listen perfectly, or we'll ever be perfectly silent on the interior, or we'll ever be able to pray perfectly. But despite all of that, I think we strive in these spiritual disciplines, even though we know we won't get them 100%. And we rely on God's merciful grace, sort of, to carry us through. So we've talked a lot about play, or at least I have talked a lot about play. But I feel like talking about play isn't good enough, right? I mean, how can we just have a sermon where all we do is talk about play and then, like, leave and not actually play anything? So today, as perhaps you've never done on Sunday morning, and I have personally never done here at F3C, we're actually going to play something. And I think we should have a little fun together. And I realize it's highly ironic that I just talked to you about freedom and play and how you can't be coerced, etc. But I'm pretty much making you all play a game. You don't have to play. If you really don't want to, you don't have to. But this is like really like, and it's actually a game that many of us have played before, and I chose it particularly for that reason, because it'll be easier to explain the rules. So the first thing we're going to do is there's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 26 phrase for all the cancellation. Okay, 26. She's got a child. Take care of her. Okay, so we're going to divide into groups of five. So divide into groups of five with the people around you, and there should be one group of six. And I'll explain the rules once we're divided. Sure. So it should be four. It was 26. Not just practice for real life, right? It's not serving some ulterior or grander purpose. But I actually think, in some ways, that play here on earth, in some ways, is sort of like practice for what heaven will be like. And I'll be honest, I think like what we just did here and everyone talking and laughing and sharing is in some sense a little glimpse of what heaven's like. And I'm not saying that heaven's just going to be a playground where everyone like runs around and there's like giant monkey bars that we play on. Maybe it is, I don't know. I'm not trying to say like a lot of precise things about the nature of heaven. But what I am saying is that in heaven we will know true freedom, right? We won't be concerned about all the things that we need to do because we will fully trust in God. And in heaven we will know true joy and be able to express true joy in who we are and what we were created to be. But that's in heaven. And in the real world, we live, in a harsh place, actually. And there's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of mouths to feed. And honestly, even though we are beings created out of joy, there's still a lot of suffering. There's still death. And it's not something that we deny. It's not something that we say simply doesn't exist. Even final victory is assured, but it has not yet come. So I'm not encouraging all of us to, like, you know, quit our jobs and play all day. And I'm not suggesting that playing hundreds and hundreds of hours of Angry Birds is, like, a really spiritual thing to do. But I am saying that we must rest in the knowledge that God is in control, and we are not. And we must live and into and experience joy and thanksgiving. And for some of us, this might actually mean carving out more time in our lives to do something as simple as play. Whether it's sports or a board game or time with kids, a musical instrument, reading a book, going to see a play, or even watching a movie, I think for some of us, we need to practice play more, actually. We need to carve time out of our lives to play, not because we've earned it, not because we've done enough work, so to speak, but because it's God's gift to us. For others of us, we might not need to increase the amount of play or carve out more time for play because maybe we play too much. For us, I think we also need to recognize that play is a spiritual discipline. It's not just distraction. It's not just something to take our mind off of the harsh realities of life. We need to recognize that during our play time, it can be and it should be a spiritual discipline, experience of trust and experience of joy. And we need to realize that play, just like work, can become really deeply unhealthy if we take the wrong stance to it. We need a new and holy, so to speak, perspective on play. And I think as Christians, we need to be, or at least we should be, expert players. And we need to join with kids to play without responsibilities, not because we don't know better, because we do know better. And we need to play in joy, not because everything is always perfect all the time, but because this is how God made us, and this is how we were created. We need to practice trust and freedom. We need to practice joy and thanksgiving. And so I would say we need to practice play. So we're going to move into a time of communion, Lord's Supper.